We have Matt Storino, Chris Walton, Bommie's here for Clement, Jim Wallace, Frank is here, Nick, Matt Collins, we've got Andy from Planning and Development, Supervisor Belsky, Supervisor Thomas, Supervisor Stock, Supervisor Stocker, Supervisor Carroll, Chief Norgan, and John O'Day is absent.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, and Youth and Governance, I'm sorry, Jake. Jake is here.
And Evie Hernandez had makeup volleyball from the 100 degree weather.
Okay, so we have two excuses. I guess I can also, for those who don't know, introduce our county executive, Matthew Kirkman, who's sitting in, and Andy Bueller, who's head of our planning and development, one of those other fun things I used to count a few years ago. Okay. Next, citizens' comments. Are there any citizens who would like to comment at this time? Yes, ma'am. Just need your name and address for the record.
My name is Marita Huff. I live at 7939 34th Avenue. And I noticed that the agenda today has a discussion of homeless people living in county parks. And I don't know if discussion means that anybody gets to comment or not, but usually it doesn't. So I thought I would make a citizen's comment at this point.
Sure.
Which I hope that when the discussion comes, that we will try to think creatively and helpfully, because this is not a bunch of vagrants that have no desire to work and just want to loaf and, have nothing better to do with their time than to annoy the citizenry. Throughout the country, we've got people that are working but can't earn enough to get an apartment. In this particular county, there's a dearth of affordable housing. Unfortunately, there was a fire yesterday, and 21 more people don't have a place to live. And so people are trying to be creative and independent, and so maybe some of them are living in county parks. I think that there's a lot of people who would say, let's solve the problem by periodically going and picking up everything they own and throwing it in the dumpster, because that's what the city does from time to time. To the people that live near the lake, on the shore, or under a bush, or whatever. And I happen to work with folks that come to my church for meals twice a week, and I'm the one who gave them that sleeping bag, or that tent, or whatever, and now they have nothing. And so their situation doesn't change. They're still homeless, but now they don't have a sleeping bag. Now they don't have anything to protect them from the cold. And so that is not helpful. So if they have a job, they have to take whatever savings they had and start over, because there's no adequate provision for shelter in this county. There's only 84 beds at the Shalom Center, and they're almost always full. And so I hope that we can think creatively, whether that means we put a porta potty out and have periodic sheriff go through and make sure things are quiet, and you folks know what your resources are, but just saying they're not worthy, let's get rid of their stuff, is not a helpful answer. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any more citizens' comments? Any more citizens' comments? Seeing more citizens' comments, we'll move on to the approval of the minutes from the previous meeting.
So moved.
Moved by Supervisor Thomas. Second. Second by Supervisor Stock. Youth and Governance, how do you vote?
Aye.
Okay. Rest of the committee?
Aye.
Okay. Just some comments, or a comment by myself. There's a couple things that are going to be brought up in the supervisor comments coming up, that I'm going to ask that they be to the point and not belabor over and over and over and over and over, so we can get through the meeting. And we do want to hear them. We just don't want to hear the repetitiveness on that, because I think once we hear it, unless there's a question, it can be responded to. It's also a something that can be, I think, a little bit personal that we want to stay away from. So let's just keep it professional as possible. Other than that, I am good. Are there any supervisors with comments? Any supervisors who have any comments? Supervisor Thomas, you have the floor.
Yeah. A couple meetings ago, I had talked about, I had been looking at leases and so forth since the first of the year, and had a number of leases and things still going through them. One of them that I started looking through more carefully was the land use agreement we had with the University of Wisconsin Parkside. I became familiar with this agreement back in 2019, and there's been a lot of work out there, and I know in holding running events out at within that property years ago, and a number of events on the UW Parkside cross country course, I'm very familiar with their risk assessment process, what's required, just because I had to abide by it. In the process of going through the lease, I met last week with the chancellor, the interim assistant chancellor, I should say the interim chancellor, the interim assistant chancellor, the risk management person for the university, and I met with their facilities and building person.
Well, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
What was the what was your capacity at that meeting when you met with them?
As a public works committee meeting, who was investigating all the leases. And as a
so you were representing the county?
Correct.
I'm not sure that you had approval to do that, Supervisor Thomas. You should have done it from your own personal side of things. It's fine that you have that, and you want to talk about it. That's not an issue. But now, don't we not have a little bit of a conflict that you kind of, I use the term,
I told everybody I was doing this several months ago and asked if anyone wanted to be involved in this committee meeting.
With a meeting with the interim chancellor?
No, investigating the leases that we had and right. Going down whatever path that might be.
Well, we'd expect those to come back to the board and the board make a decision whether we want to.
Well, I have to present some of the findings here. I'm going to go ahead and continue.
All right.
So,
go ahead.
So what I found in this meeting is that we haven't followed the vast majority of anything in this land use agreement. According to our land use agreement, we are supposed to. The university has to approve any type of work that's done on the trails. I asked them if we had received since May of 2019, if they had received any documentation from the county regarding any of the trail work that was being done out there. If any of the features that were added to this, if any of this had been submitted. So I'm just gonna highlight the things that I gave to them. Page 2 of the agreement, to clearly define the relationship between the county and the university to provide guidance and direction to manage approximately 139 acres of natural resources located on the Board of Regents property. Page 4, 5-2, and I have a copy of this and several of them. So page 4, number 5, trail development. The university must approve trail plans prior to construction. If unauthorized trails or trail features or structures or constructed on the property, the university and or the county shall have the right to remove these structures as see fit. All trails shall remain open to the public at all times during normal Kenosha County hours per county ordinance. Page 5, number 2, the county may enter into an agreement with a community organization for the maintenance, construction, supervision of these trails. The county shall obtain university approval in the event that the county does enter in such an agreement. Such approval shall not be unreasonably withheld.
Can I ask you a question? You're talking about just property on the University of Wisconsin Parkside?
Correct.
Okay.
East of the golf course. The first two ones that I've highlighted have not been done. We haven't complied. Page 5, number 8, termination. A failure to comply with any part of the agreement may be considered cause for termination. Covenants. Number page 7, number 11, covenants of the county. The county shall be responsible for developing strategic plan, trail plans, natural resource inventory, ecological management plan, ecological restoration plan, the plan for the Pike River restoration, These plans will be shared and approved by the university prior to restoration of the Pike River or construction of new trails, restoration of trails, abandonment of undesired, unsustainable, or unsafe trails. Such approval shall not be unreasonably withheld. We didn't comply with that either. Normal maintenance. The county may designate normal maintenance tasks to volunteers with policies established by university risk management. The risk management they have in meeting with them, none of that has been done. Extraordinary maintenance. The county shall provide a written request and obtain consent from the university, which shall not be unreasonably withheld when extraordinary maintenance is required. I have copies if anyone wants these. So in saying all this, I came to a couple different conclusions. One is, and I've done literally a lot more research on this than anyone could ever imagine. I could not find anywhere in our, since 2019, in the agenda items listed for this committee or in the parks report that referenced this or submitting anything to this committee to be approved, to that could be going on to UW Parkside for them to look at. If it's there, I couldn't find it, but I literally went back. I asked Wendy to actually send me something that couldn't be found on their website. So in saying all this, I think there's two things that happened. We signed a land use agreement, but we didn't create policy on how we were supposed to follow it. I'm sure people within the Parks Department, Corporate Council, they read through this and they understood that we had to comply with it, but we haven't at all. In doing this, and I have part of the University of Wisconsin Risk Management, because I wanted to be educated on that when I went and met with them. They have a very high standard. They detail it in this agreement as well, and what's required when people do work out there. And since they're not in control of the group that was doing work out there, they counted on the county to do that, but they had to meet certain requirements as well. I think we need to create some kind of policy that gives direction to the Parks Department on how they have to handle this.
What is UWP's response to all this?
They're getting me off track here.
Well, I'm not trying to get off track, but you said that.
So no, that's fine. I'll go back. I have it here. I'll get back.
Okay.
So
I could just make a point of order. It seems like the discussion has been steering towards specifically the mountain bike trails.
No. I'm not talking about mountain bike trails at all. I'm talking about
the agreement.
Hold on for a second. Mark, yes, you go first.
I'm just making a point of order. It seems that the discussion is supposed to be around the comprehensive plan, which is
No. This is supervisor comments.
Oh, I thought.
And I'm just asking some questions. I get clarity on where he's going.
So, okay. In a point of order to the chair, why wasn't this an agenda item?
Because we don't have the director of Public Works here today, and I want her here if we're.
So why are we having?
This is supervisor comments.
It
seems more important that it would be an agenda item, and I have concern that. A supervisor from the county board is representing this committee
right.
to the University of Wisconsin when University of Wisconsin should be working with our county executive, our parks department. Excuse me.
No,
I have the floor. I have the floor, sir.
They're actually interrupting you, Mark.
No, right. I have point of order. And I just feel that we should dial this back. Wait till our director is here. I think the county executive should have a discussion with UW Parkside and with Ms. Billingsley to understand what Parkside's concerns are.
I'm going to let him continue because he does have, first of all, has the floor because he is the supervisor comment that he had to. So I'm going to listen to it as I hope everyone else does, and then we can move on. But he has concerns that I think we ought to hear.
Go ahead, you had a question?
Yeah. Well, the question I had was just, what was the response by?
Okay, the response was is that they thought we were taking care of things properly.
So they have no?
They have no idea what we've been doing out there or what we haven't been doing.
Okay. Oh. Go ahead.
Because we haven't been supplying with anything. And because I don't think we have a policy in place that deals with it. So. And meeting with them, this was sort of the outcome. And I'll just read my brief overview. And if anyone wants a copy, I'm happy to share a copy. The county has not been complying, and we need to stop, and we need to stop all work and close all jumps, ramps, and similar features until they are reviewed by University of Wisconsin Parkside and advised by the risk management team. They're unaware of these risks, and they were never informed of them. We can't expose them to liability they're not aware of. That's my comment on that first sentence. We need to create a policy moving forward to ensure that we abide by the terms of the agreement. Here are some things that I'm suggesting. All work in UWP must be submitted to the Public Works Committee for review and approval or denial by the Parks Director, which shall include all work to be done for that given project and a risk assessment and risk management evaluation, and ensure it follows the terms of the UWP land use agreement, does not violate Kenosha County Chapter 10 ordinance or state statute Chapter 18. If approved by the Public Works Committee, then submit it to the County Board for approval. If approved by the County Board, instruct the Parks Director to submit the UWP for their approval. And then UWP will review, was shared, and then they can either approve or deny, and the county will proceed accordingly. University of Wisconsin Parkside was also like a detailed map of all the emergency access points to the trails, where the bridges are located, and are they safe for UTV traffic. These maps need to be submitted to the UW Police Department, Summers and Kenosha Fire Departments, and the UWP Risk Management Office. UWP would also like detailed maps that include signs that identify a specific location by number in case of emergency, personnel or others can locate the person or persons more easily that might be injured. UWP would like all structures and fire pits removed, which I have sent pictures of those to.
We're not building those though. Those are on their property.
but we're managing the property.
Not in that capacity. Not that capacity.
They think we are.
I don't think so.
We can agree to disagree, but we're managing that property for them. All I'm just saying is they don't want those structures there or the fire pit. They've had fires out there before. These are like stick structures. I have pictures and some videos if anyone wants to see them later. Some of them are very cool. I would hate to see them go, but if Parkside doesn't want them there, it is their property. We're the leasee. We are not the lessor. We are the leasee. And that the county monitor the property more closely going forward to prevent these types of structures and fire pits from returning. And absolutely no camping is permitted. I have a lot more information regarding this, which I brought, which I'll cover at some other point in the future. I just think that from a committee standpoint, we have to retroactively abide by this agreement. I don't know how we cannot abide by it. It's a signed document from the previous county executive. Us postponing it a month, ignoring it, it puts the university at liability for things that they haven't reviewed or approved. There's probably, I can't speak out of turn here, I don't know if any permits were taken with the DNR. And some of the things that we do, I've read through the wetlands and the permit requirements and floodplains and wetland areas. May have violated that. I'm not 100% sure. What I do know 100% sure is we are not complying with this agreement that we signed over 4 years ago. And we have to remedy that somehow. And there is a balance of power here. We have a county executive that oversees administration, and then we have county board supervisors that represent our constituents, and we represent the taxpayers. And if we're exposing our taxpayers to a liability that should have not been exposed to, and we're exposing UW Parkside, who is a partner of ours, to things that they shouldn't be exposed to. We can't wait another month or another 2 months. We need to do something now, and there's no reason why we can't say these features are closed because they've never been reviewed, and that we go out with the risk management team, and I would say it'd be a combination of county board supervisors and staff, so it's balanced. It's only been one way this whole time, and we haven't complied with anything. We have a responsibility as county board supervisors to each other to investigate things and go down rabbit holes if we think things aren't being done correctly. And things weren't being done correctly. And I think things could have been done much more properly, but I don't think there were policies in place And there are a lot of policies, I think, that are could be improved that give better direction on how things are supposed to flow in situations like this, especially one as unique as this, where we're the leasee, and we have to follow someone else's rules when we're not creating it. So, and I'll be talking about some of these other things at another meeting time. But
Andy or Matt, a risk to what comes on the map?
I had an opportunity to speak to Corp Counsel Director Billingsley last week because of Supervisor Thomas's email, so we wanted to look into that, and Supervisor Billingsley set up a meeting with Corp Counsel to review specifically mountain bike trails, because I think that's where you're most concerned.
No, right? I'm not concerned at all with any kind of trails. I'm concerned
so
with
us where's not complying. The risk? I just want to clarify the risk.
The jumps and the ramps and the berms. Well, none of this. None
to
of
the mountain bike trails, correct? I just want to make sure I'm answering your
answer. Let me be perfectly clear. They're concerned with the hazards that are out there. They're concerned that.
Who's there?
You're talking about UWP.
UWP. They're concerned that none of this, that we haven't complied with this land use agreement at all. They're especially concerned with some of the features on there that result in injury. The highest injury rate for mountain bikers is going over the handlebars from jumps. It's just reality. Serious injuries, not scrapes and cuts. And there are several jumps out there. There's one that's like going off the end of a pier that they were not aware of. There's concrete foundation, it goes up, you know. So, but they weren't aware of it. Those are their biggest concerns, that they're exposed to liability that they're not aware of. And by default, they're sort of consenting to it.
So from our risk and liability standpoint, mountain biking is in every community with very similar features, structures. Google it for Milwaukee County, Waukesha County, La Crosse. These ramps, the structures that you saw, Supervisor Thomas, are very common for single-track, purpose-built mountain bike trails. We're not inventing anything new
in Kenosha
County.
Was it submitted to the park site? Was it submitted to Parkside for their review and approval?
What we do with UW Parkside on an annual basis is we actually evaluate and review our comprehensive plan. And I shared it with Jake.
I asked a yes or no question.
I'm explaining it with Supervisor Thomas. So
you either submitted or you did. I don't want to be talked around, that's all.
But you'll have information. Let me hear the information too.
So every season we meet with the same folks that you met with during that individual meeting with UW Parkside, and we show them. So in the previous year, we completed all multi-use trails shown in yellow. So I can send this around. There's been numerous versions of that as we went through since 2018 to work with UW Parkside, the Chancellor's Office, their Land Use Committee. There's a specific committee called the Land Use Committee for UW Parkside that evaluated that plan over and over again based on natural areas, the sensitivity of different species, old growth forest, how we can make our plan comprehensive as far as the use within Petrifying Springs Park and UW Parkside. We have shared this with our previous Public Works Committee. I plan on sharing this more often to this committee just to make sure that we're continuing up to speed as far as the ongoing efforts to complete this comprehensive trail plan. And this really is our master plan that has been approved on all levels. Once we have the authority being Kenosha County through our IGA that was approved through the county board, it's up to us as administration to fulfill those obligations of what the specific details are. In the past, we have not talked about berms or jumps or this or that or the other. That's what I consider details that are entrusted onto us as administrators and the experts to construct trails how we see fit. We communicate these things on an annual basis, if not more often, both internally through our committees, our county executive, but also with UW Parkside. To answer your question directly, yes, Vice Chancellor now, Scott Menke, and myself, took utility vehicles around to review these trails. We do so on at least an annual basis, and we plan on doing it this fall.
Provide me with the documentation of this committee, with the documentation that you submitted for the ramps and the berms and just the other things that you did to the trails?
We did not submit anything to UW Parkside with ramps or berms. We have a very good working relationship.
You're required to, according to
I have not heard from UW Parkside if they were requesting that type of information. I'm more than happy to.
Would you like me to read it?
No, I would like to talk to him directly.
We're going into a discussion. This is becoming a discussion that is not on the agenda, and this needs to be an agenda item if we're going to continue.
Well, this is citizens' comments, and you're giving him.
It's not citizens' comments.
This is where, this is report, this is not comments. This is not discussion.
So my point is, we have a great working relationship with UW Parkside. I work directly with the interim chancellor. I have not heard any negative feedback or concerns with the trail construction other than what you provided. So if they do, I would recommend all committee members to hear from UW Parkside of what they actually say, because I talked to their facilities director after you met with them. He expressed no concerns. You mentioned they have no concerns. So here, otherwise,
they have no concerns. They want to know the access points for emergency vehicles.
We've shared that with them numerous times. We've shared that numerous times.
This is what they asked me in that meeting. I didn't make this up.
It's important for the county to have a liaison, specifically a director of parks, to have these ongoing working relationships with an IAGA, because we do not want to play a game of telephone and soil our working relationships with other governmental
entities. So let me ask you a question. Did you submit what volunteer group would be working with the university?
Point of order. This is getting into a debate.
Okay, I'm going to end this right now. If you want to go forward with the policy, you got to go through a resolution to get it done. So put one together,
I'll
come to the board. I'm sorry, come to the committee, and then we'll see where it goes from there, and then maybe up to the board.
That's fine.
Thank you.
There's a lot more to come on this issue.
I'm sure there is. Okay. Any other supervisors? All right. Seeing no more supervisor comments, we have the Georgia County Comprehensive Bike Plan discussion going forward here. Everyone received the plan. They might have sent in my car. But one of the things that we just had was the Thielen Bike Trail kickoff. Yeah, that has to stay open. That has to stay open. That has to stay open. Oh, okay. Yeah, that is. Thank you. And that was not part of the comprehensive bike plan. It was not known at the time. And I think, Andy, you were also part of that, were you not?
The bike comprehensive plan,
yeah.
Yes.
Right, yeah. So maybe we could update the committee on going forward and what we may need to do to update the plan. I know we still have to go through the whole process of designing, voting, and, you know, getting approval. But if we want to go forward, Matt or Andy, the one of the two of you, however you want to do it, because I know a lot of the folks here weren't on the committee back, how many years ago that was built? Hold on to that.
Cover that, man.
Sure, keep up.
Yeah, so the bike plan, the multi-jurisdictional comprehensive bicycle plan was completed in 2013. And that stemmed from the previous county executive having a blue ribbon committee that he put together to just research out biking in our community and what needed to be done. And from that, the number one item was to come up with an actual bike plan, because we had bike trails being built in different communities, or just, let's just call it bike facilities. And sometimes we had situations where they weren't meeting, so we realized something needed to be done. And so in 2013, that plan was adopted. It was approved by the committees, or approved by the county board. And since then, we've been working through various different means. Sometimes it's through parks, sometimes it's through the highway department, on constructing the system. And you know, it ends up being based upon different funding sources that become available. And so that's one of the key components of that. So the plan, it had a date of 2025. I mean, that's just a couple years away. And so, I mean, we have been and meet on it regularly and look at the plan, try to see where it's at, what improvements can be made when things come to the attention of the highway commissioner or to the parks director about the ability to do some improvements. We look at the plan to see if that's something that it matches up with. And so I guess from what we're realizing, obviously we're getting to the end of that particular date. All of the goals that were put in that plan have not been met by any means. But we've started to meet. So Clement, Matt, myself, and Shelley have been meeting, and we continue to look to meet on this as we just try to figure out exactly the best road to move forward with doing an update. One of the biggest aspects is the map and then the goals and objectives. I don't necessarily know when we've talked as a group, if we needed to get into some of the other data, but as opposed to write the map, the thing that's going to show us and guide us exactly when we make decisions on doing improvements, and then the goals and objectives to try to get there. And you have to keep in mind is that the plan also has other goals and objectives that's not just related to the trail or the bike facilities. I mean, like one of the other goals of the plan was to have a bike committee, which we've had, and we meet regularly every year since then to just discuss other ways to be able to do different aspects. I mean, we've had a bike rodeo a couple of years. That was another suggestion of the plan. So there's aspects of the plan that kind of work on the side of, besides just the map. But from the mapping standpoint, we wanted to let you know that, you know, one of the biggest things actually in that was to do a signage of everything. And Clement was able to, actually I think it was Gary, was able to secure a grant originally, and then Clement came in, was able to follow through and put it into play. And so that signage aspect was put into place. When they did that, the bike plan was actually reanalyzed. So originally when the plan was put together by the consultant, they analyzed the roads, you know, the data, the crash, and they came up with a network. And then when we were looking to do a signage plan, that a different entity that we had hired to do it reanalyzed all that. And then from that learned different things and made different decisions exactly on where things should go. So I think that the map has kind of been refined over the time. And now we're looking now to try to figure out, okay, now that we have a signed network, what areas now can we start moving forward to? Where can we have goals and objectives? Where can we apply for grants that would meet some of the areas of greatest concern that we want to do improvements? I think the last handful of years, the improvements have happened just because there have been highway projects. KR was done that no one knew was going to happen, and trails were put on there. Highway S popped onto the radar, which we didn't really have in the plan originally, and that was put in place. And so some of those things were unknown at the time and have now been put in, and we need to just kind of update all that. So with, I guess, saying all that, the data that we have, we're working with GIS to just map out and update what we know, because we have the parks map, the activity guide, right, with the map in there, Matt, that has all the network that's related to the signage. And we just need to have like a new map. What map are we going to use as our basis? And then from that basis, then we can move forward with other discussions on what we want to do. So that's at least my viewpoint on some things, but certainly open to Matt if I miss something and you want to add, or anyone else, or has questions.
I would just add that, yes, you nailed everything. So it's just looking beyond 2025 of where we are existing, what our accomplishments are, and from a bike infrastructure and safety, we're trying to layer those two things together, because some of the county roads, as far as wayfinding and routes, we just want to make sure that the bicyclists have the best information possible and the best routes possible from a safety standpoint too. So we're going to be evaluating from a recreational standpoint, a safety standpoint, and seeing where our low-hanging fruit is with bike infrastructure with county highway projects or new opportunities like Theo and Sand and Gravel, where we can make those critical connections not only within Kenosha County, but outside of Kenosha County, like McHenry County, Burlington, Lake Geneva. So we're all part of this, what's considered the Route of the Badger plan, where people can really go not only from A to B, but A to Z throughout all of Wisconsin and beyond.
A couple of years ago, when Ray was the director, and the bike plan magically came up, because I had not seen it. I was on the public works for 2 years, and it never arrived at the committee in those 2 years I was on it. I was absolutely frightened by the fact that these signs were going to go up, and they were going up on the county highways out west, which is not safe to be on. I think the regular bikers, I think I brought this up at the time, they're going to go wherever they're going to go. You don't need them, bro. They got GPS, they know what they want to do. I was never in favor of those signs, ever. I know someone said that they're not going to pay the money to take them down, so. But the fact remained was Ray had admitted they hadn't really kind of looked at it when they were doing roads to figure, you know, we got to put some. I had them take them off. I was lucky to get them off Highway C when you stuck in west of 94 there a bit, because there's places, there is no place to ride a bike except for in the lane, and I know that's where bikes belong, but you got to understand what it's like out west. It's not safe, and even the bike plan showed 7 or 8, you know, accidents on county highways where people were either hurt real badly or killed, including Kelly Dineen, who was the Wilmont High School athletic director. She got hurt real bad, and I just felt that was a bad idea to say go down here when they're just going to go where they're going to go. But when we get to the multi-use type stuff, that's where I think the rubber hits the road, no pun intended, on this, for safe biking. And that's where I think our focus should lay on it and get them off the road, because the hardcore bikers are going to be on the roads no matter what. And they're going to be on any road, not just the ones that have the signs that say this is the bike path. So that was my concern. Some of it was adjusted based off that. And there are some places where it is fine, where you do have enough space where you can be on the right side out of the way. But that's an area of concern out west. I don't know in the east side. I know there's bike lanes and there's all that there already. But it's just something we've got to figure out to make those connections. And we will, and we'll have to use some of the county roads for what it is that those multi-use trails, which are not so much hardcore biking, but you know, the ones that are out there wanting to go long distances on, you know, with their kids or maybe walking or running or something like that. So I'm excited to see what we end up with the Thielen design plan when that goes forward. So anybody else have any questions? Go ahead, Supervisor Scott.
Yeah, just to piggyback off of that, definitely I'm someone that enjoys both mountain biking, road biking, in all of its aspects personally. I think I'm looking at the bike plan right now, and you guys have it all laid out, the different types, right? In my honest opinion, we should only be calling a bike path or a bike route something that has a bike lane, a shared use path, or maybe in a city situation, these shared lane markings. But paved shoulder, that's not a bike lane. That's just, you know, I run a landscape company, I pull a dump trailer around. I use every bit of a full lane. And so that leaves zero room for error. So if we're doing updating maps, if we're putting it out to the community, hey, this is a bike route, I believe we should exclude paved shoulders from that. Or, you know, areas where there's not any signage at all. I think we should put our focus on, if we're telling people, hey, this is a bike path, this is a bike where you can feel comfortable riding your bike, leave it to the bike lanes, like how Pleasant Prairie does it, Kenosha does it on 39th Avenue, where it's, you know, lane and then a mini bike lane and then off and then on street parking. It's all separated, and so that, you know, if you choose to ride in that bike lane, you can actually kind of ride off to the right and give yourself a bigger buffer between traffic. But I enjoy riding my bike on the road. My least favorite points are those areas where there's no wiggle room. So I personally try to stay on the shared use path, the multi-use. I like riding the lakefront. You know, I'll ride up by Carthage. I'll have to jump on Sheridan for about a mile, but there's two lanes there, and the signage says bikes can use full lane. So that gives me a little bit of, you know, heads up, that the car's heads up that there could be bikes on this road. And then I hop onto the trail to E and I'll ride Parkside, and you can ride that all the way into Racine, which is beautiful. So I think that's where we should have our focus as far as putting that out to the community. But paved shoulders, not safe. And I mean, that should be discouraged as far as anyone other than the hardcore bikers that are going to ride it anyway. Especially just because of the hills out in the county. You know, you'll be cresting a hill and, oh, there's a biker, or even people walking. There's a lot of people walking, and it catches me off guard every time. So it's, you know, that should be, safety should be, you know, key focus with that. And but from looking at the bike feeling again, paved shoulder should not be considered a safe, you know, route for your average commuter. So that's my input.
Anybody else?
We did take those off, just as a heads up, from our parks activity guide. That was one of the things that we did want to correct.
Excellent.
So that was already something that we had internal agreements on that shouldn't be listed.
And I know we are, you know, in committee, we are talking about bringing more of the off-road paths, like as the construction company, Clement's been telling us along with that. So I think we should continue our focus on building those so that we have spaces for those. But yeah, let's get it on. Thank you.
What about your comments?
Yeah, I just had one thought. When we put a ball, and this was on the parks, this is the I Love Bike Route signs, that's under the highway department. One thing when I was asking Clement about this a year ago, or more than a year ago, I asked him a question on, did anyone ever ride the bike route and follow the signs through the county? Multiple people or one person or even drive it. Ideally, you want to get the best feel by riding it on a bike. And the answer to that question was no. And I know since then you had concern with people going too fast, and some of the Supervisor Bashaw brought up a personal experience, you know, most recently. I think before we start doing anything and declaring a road a bike route, is that we physically go and actually bike it. Somebody go and bike it and what their experience is, and not just one time, but try to go different times of the day and what the traffic is like. Because County Road C could be completely abandoned. But sometimes, at different times of the day, it's getting backed up, you know, steady traffic all the way to 94 coming or going, depending on the time of day.
Yeah, and I get that completely because we've heard that. But I, as part of the process, besides the two consultants that did go through things and they did research and they did go up and down the roads and they videotaped things. I mean, we sent it to our bike committee, some avid bicycle enthusiasts, and we gave it to them for suggestions and comment. And so all that stuff was put into play to get the product that we have. So. At least so you know that it just wasn't done blindly. I mean, there was a process and we had a lot of eyes on it, and we understand the aspects when you look at like what's considered just a route, right? A route is just to get from here to here, but doesn't have any built features to it. Right, right. And we understand that the most optimum is to have something separated, right? And even sewer pack in their plan, that's their optimum and ultimate goal to be able to do.
And we are 10 years later down the road, so I think we have a few more population running down the roads as well. We are improving roads, so that's an improvement of that, too.
It's just, I guess, a follow-up question. So I don't know how many miles there are exactly on the posted bike route signs. Do you have an idea of what? Because some of them go Pleasant Prairie and Summers and each little town.
Right? The whole county.
Is there anybody that, or how this is ever monitored to make sure that shoulder part is still maintaining its integrity? The reason I say that is...
Are you talking specifically on the bike routes?
Yeah, on the bike route, yeah. Or even on the bike paths that are paved. The only reason I say that is because if we don't maintain them properly and someone was to get, say, a pothole or something breaks away on the shoulder that allows them to go into a district, I mean, we would be assume some type of responsibility for that. If we're saying, oh yeah, you can go bike that way and it's safe in that lane, and then it ends up, I'm just curious what if we have a maintenance procedure, if we monitor X amount of miles of that every year, is that part of that plan, you know?
Not through what I do. I don't know if it's anything between highways and parks.
Highway division of anything?
Yeah, highway would.
Yeah, not that I'm aware of. Yeah. I mean, most of the time when we drive out, you know, we see certain things that need to be fixed, we jump on it right away. But yeah, as far as doing something,
I don't know if it's an issue or not. I just know from, unfortunately, doing way too much research that there's been lawsuits in the landowners that have been responsible for not maintaining something or like going into a pothole or going into a ditch where the road is eroded. And we would end up being liable for something like that if it, it's obvious
that
maintained.
Is it right if I tell a personal story about biking? That's not really about liability or stuff, but at least for me, I like to bike a lot. I'm on my school's mountain biking team, and I like to go on the road as well. And I, at least like a year or two ago, I wasn't the most avid biker, and so I was trying to learn. And I did try to find the road with signed posts that said, this is the Kenosha County bike route, and I took that down trying to go to Illinois because there's a trail in Illinois that goes down to North Chicago that starts at Tremper, and so I had to just find the signs and went along, and as I went along, I would find that sometimes these signs would be on roads that have very tight shoulders, that have curves where you have a truck coming at, or a semi, at like 40 miles per hour passing you with maybe 1 or 2 feet. And I would say, at least for me, I have experience where the signs take you through routes where it may be sometimes be very good and comfortable to bike, but you get these just very annoying routes where there's completely no allowance for safety. But I think it's also important to consider that we also need to, I feel like, encourage that all roads in some ways can be used, because I neither want it to be that we feel like we need to push bikers off roads because they're considered unsafe, where rather roads are for people, not for cars. And so I think it's also important to consider the fact that just by saying, oh, we shouldn't encourage these roads, doesn't mean we need to then ignore those roads for future development in any sort of case.
So I'm doing, again, I don't know if Pommier has been handed out. We are updating our the highway map with the projects for this year. And when we are going through with Clements and the entire team, they look at the PACER report. Now, again, that hasn't been done for this coming year, but again, we look at that all the time with the team when we're trying to look at different road projects and analyze road projects. Sometimes it's hard because I might want to pivot and pave a road, but if I pivot and pave a road, it might then prohibit us from going out and capturing other monies. So it is really hard to balance that, and so it is looking to make sure that, yes, those, because I walk almost every day on Highway E, and I know my road, some areas are better than others along it, and people know me and know that I pick up garbage along the road. You know, again, you just have to be really mindful when you're out there on the county roads these days. It's, you know, watching
the traffic. Well, I don't think you expect it, you know, out on the county roads, like you do maybe closer to the sidewalk and all that, so.
So as we did, like, Highway EM, for instance, we put as large a shoulder as we could, and thank you to Supervisor Carroll and his leadership to try to make that path and those shoulders as wide as they could to accommodate. And I was really surprised. I was out there, we were out there at 9 o'clock for the ribbon cutting, and I drove up and down the road, and I couldn't believe how many walkers and bikers were out there in the middle of the week. So,
yeah, we definitely have a lot of busy, different, very varied types of roads in the county. And I think the goal is to make them better all the time. The Supervisor Thomas's comments about whether we're responsible for maintenance or whether there's liability. I mean, we can talk to Corporation Counsel. I'm not an attorney, but I think it's pretty much at your own risk for either driving in a vehicle or any type of use on the road. I mean, I don't think, that there's...
If we know there's a pothole there and we don't take care of it, then it's on us.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I'm just, there's been
research I found we're liable.
I'm not an attorney, and I don't want to get into that debate, but talk to Corporation Counsel. I don't think we're the ones that are.
I'm just saying that we should still be maintaining safe, though. If we're saying it's a bike route, we should make sure there's no potholes or a rolling surface that makes it hazardous, right?
No, it's very
important. Yeah, we. So I actually monitor that, and whenever we get those concerns from the general public, we go out there and take care of it right away.
I was just going to say the team is here working even on a Saturday and Sunday, because down at we had in Paddock Lake, we had some problems during the changeover before we switched to the new pavement, and I was calling on the weekends and we would send cars out, to try to fill the potholes as quickly as possible. And the Sheriff's Department knows that they see something as well, into the highway department too, and after hour numbers that the sheriff department calls as well.
Yeah, and just to piggyback off for Supervisor Thomas's, those road conditions that may be small for an automobile are amplified when you're on a bike. I did the dairy breakfast ride. It was a great ride. I was much more comfortable because we had the sheriff's escort the entire time, so I was able to focus on just pedaling and not on the traffic around me, so that was helpful to have that. But I think the worst that you're going to run into is mostly just gravel kicking up onto those paved shoulders is going to be a real hazard for a biker, because our tires are super thin and that can get slippery, that can cause slip and falls, and then when you have a car coming up beside you, that's where it gets dicey. So the other portions of the roads, I would just go back into the lane, because the shoulder has gravel right next to it that gets kicked up onto the shoulder, and now you have a hazard for bikers. So just keep an eye on that, over to the highway department. Just make sure that, those little things, while they may not seem like a big deal to an automobile, it's amplified. And if we're calling, so like Supervisor Thomas is saying, if we're calling this a bike lane, we should be giving extra attention to those small details, because it's only amplified when you're, you know, riding on the bike. And then follow up with, what was your first name? I'm sorry.
Jake.
To follow up with Jake's comments, I don't know if there is a way, you know, obviously, you know, the signage is there, right? It doesn't sound like we're able to do much with it at this point. But similar to our mountain bike trails, is there a way that, to his point that he experienced, he's following the signs blindly? I'm assuming you weren't using like a GPS or anything, so you're just blindly following the signs. Is there a way that we can maybe put some kind of a color coding grading system that alerts you, hey, this route, you know, turn left here, this is going to be a red. A red means this is a paved shoulder, or, you know, no room whatsoever. And then maybe a yellow or a green is, you know, this route. If you turn
double black diamond.
Yeah, right. So if you turn right, you know, you're going to find off-road bike lanes. If you turn left, this is all paved shoulders. So even if you don't have the app or you don't have the map ahead of time, you can kind of get a little bit of warning of what you're driving into, because maybe you don't feel like it. You know, sideswipe by a truck today, so you're going to turn around and go back the other way, or turn right instead. So that may be an option, kind of like similar to what we do with the mountain bike trails, is kind of just giving people a heads up. Hey, if you turn right, it's going to get dicey. If you turn left, it's going to be easy. And that may be something that we can make use of the infrastructure that's already there, would be my comment.
We'll look into it.
Awesome. Anybody else? Well, those are nice as 4x4s, by the way, that I think I've ever seen.
They sanded all of them back.
Okay. All right. So we'll continue working on that bike plan, updating it. When you guys have something, I guess we'll see it then.
Sounds good.
Okay, thank you. All right, next is the discussion relating to those experiencing homelessness in the county parks. I actually had a couple of supervisors ask me about bringing this and putting this on the agenda as well. Yes, Matt, you have sent over some information on what the current park rules are. I don't know if you call policies or not. But,
absolutely.
But did you want to, I know you just highlighted a couple of different areas.
I guess I could give some background history if you'd like.
Go ahead.
So Kenosha County, just like every other community, we're not immune to homelessness within our county parks or anywhere else. So it's just, I think, becoming more of a topic at hand. I think this is a great discussion item to our committee to give a little bit of more background and history as far as homelessness within our county park. So as of recent, we had 4 different homeless individuals within Kenosha County that have been reported directly to me. 3 within a county park, 1 even at the county center. And he frequently visits during normal business hours, parks in a routine spot. And we just start to know who these individuals are. Most of them, they're following all county rules, county ordinances, they go about their day. Most of the general public would have probably no idea that they're even homeless or not. It's just more of our park operations that are there habitually. Start to see patterns of certain vehicles or anything else. So we've started developing relationships with local nonprofit partners within Kenosha County, because we're not really the professionals in order to give assistance. It's my own philosophical approach, as long as they're not a safety issue and they're following all county ordinances. Our first reaction, being our Parks Division, always is to assist, help, and give them the support if they're down on their luck. And we always try to work with our community partners like the Sharing Center, for instance. They're very much more equipped to make sure that these individuals know resources that are available to them within Kenosha County or other neighboring communities for food support, maybe permanent shelter opportunities that are there. If they're a veteran, put them in touch with our local VA centers. And that's what we do in our Parks Division, is try to either have those nonprofits take the lead, or what we've done with the Sharing Center, I'll pass these out, is they have nice little flyers that we feel comfortable with our parks operations staff. We get to know them, we say hi, as long as there's a cordial relationship. We pass these out just so they know what services are available to those homeless individuals. Unfortunately, a lot of the times, they do not want those types of services, and that has to be their personal choice to take that support. There's nothing that we can do to force upon them for housing or residence or to take upon any of those opportunities as we see it. So our staff, we usually step aside as long as they're following all the guidelines of our county ordinances. And they're there just like anyone else in order to reside. But if it becomes a safety issue, if they become a challenge because of perceived mental health issues, if they will not leave a site that's rented as far as a pavilion, we always cordially ask them. But if it escalates, then we just back off being our parks, and it becomes a sheriff deputy matter that they're more equipped to deal with these situations. So internally with our staff, we have many different routine conversations with my leadership team in operations in order to do those types of empathetic things and making sure they get the different resources, but also knowing if there's a life safety or they feel that they're at risk, remove themselves from the situation, call authorities, because there's other people other than our parks operations that are equipped to manage those types of situations. Homeless are not. You know, there's, especially as of recent, tempers can flare up with even constituents, and we'd never want to escalate a situation. We don't want to be perceived as the bad people in these situations, being our parks. And we also know that there's other professionals that have been trained to deal with these. So other than that, I know one of the individuals that's homeless that's currently at Silver Lake Park, we actually went out of our way to try other avenues through the Great Lakes Naval Base, through the Captain James level VA. And there's other people that are very equipped to deal with homeless veterans within our community. And they have also made multiple attempts to try to get this individual that's helping services. So we always try different areas, but at the end of the day, it's going to have to be upon them to take advantage of those opportunities. So, Martin, happy to answer any other questions.
Any questions on how we go about surprise Thomas?
I'm not sure if anyone else saw the video with Holly Nelson, and I'm not sure who the other gentleman was. I'm sure that's who you're referencing at Silver Lake Park. It's up on the, I don't know what shelter that is, but on the south part.
B as in boy.
Yeah. But during that video, Mr. Nelson called you. Did that, and I just want to get some background. How many, it sounded like in that video and that discussion that Ali had been out there previously. Would that be, was that accurate?
Yes, he was out there previously.
Okay. Like the day before or 2 weeks before, what was?
I don't have dates, but it was more than a couple days. I'd say weeks before.
So within a week.
To my knowledge, I don't know if he was out there.
Jared who would have called?
No, it was actually a constituent.
Point of order, we could have a legal situation here because we do have a disgruntled employee who has hired an attorney. I'm not sure we should be discussing details of times, places, when, where. I just think it's.
Well, I won't. I'm not going to ask
you. No, it's not. It's not just. It's not just against you. Even timelines could impact a lawsuit. I think we should be very cautious on the details of what transpired, so that we protect the county.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this a different way. Then maybe at the next meeting, or you can talk with Corbin. I guess I would like to know more of that story because it was such a volatile moment for all three individuals over there and probably many more. I would just like a little bit more of the background that led up to that and if how it ended up resulting in something that ended up being, lack of a better way to say it, very disturbing on a couple different levels. So I guess whatever you can share that'd be appropriate leading up to that. You know, I guess in a sense, when he was first noticed, there was some reference that he was maybe harassing people while he was there.
Again, point of order.
I
understand, and I want to know the story too, but because there is a potential legal case here, I think we should be very cautious on what we ask and what we respond to.
Well, no, that's why I'm asking. I'm not asking for answers, things that he could ask corporate counsel to see if he can respond to. The things that I'm talking about are of public, they're in the public domain right now. Everything I'm talking about, other people have heard.
I know, but we're so, in a county,
no, I
we're
understand
in a county
that.
Board committee.
No, I understand that. And we oversee the parks as part of this. So
right.
Whatever is practical to share at this point, whatever might be pending or they foresee pending, I think would just be helpful to know what happened prior to that with that individual and how we interacted with them. That's all. Whatever might be appropriate.
I can get a hold of corp counsel.
Yeah, that would be preferred. That it's not really a parks item. It's more of a corp counsel item.
Yeah. I don't think this kind of issue is going to go away in the future. I know in the city there's lots of incidences, in different areas, but hopefully we learn something from it as well in the process. And it sounds like what you're doing is excellent already, so.
Thank you. Yeah, again, I agree we should stay out of the details, but if you could just walk us through, you kind of walked us up through the point where we're giving the person information, but can you just walk us through what our current policy is? Say you get a complaint from somebody calls and complains, concerned citizen, you come across them yourself. So what is the workflow? What's the process? Where, you walked us through, we try to give them resources. What happens if they don't take those resources? And then what, if you could dive into a little bit more specifically, what are the ordinances? So someone has a tent in a county park. Is that illegal? When is that illegal? When is that not illegal? If you can kind of catch where I'm going with it.
Correct.
So if you could just walk us through that, here's what happens if somebody refuses help. These are the steps that we take. And then if you could elaborate on the ordinances, just overall, what are the general ordinances with regards to people in our parks and staying overnight or whatever? What's allowed, what's not allowed?
Absolutely. So again, it's the discretion based on the situation for a lot of this stuff, homeless or not. If it's a safety issue or my field staff feel that this is escalating, we call the sheriffs. We do it with our beachfront with Silver Lake Park. If we feel that there's a situation, we don't hesitate to get the sheriffs involved if we feel that it's gonna escalate. We don't wanna have a what if situation start to quickly get away from us, because it's seconds before something like that people turn. So you have to read the situation appropriately, especially when there's a conflict between two entities. Most of the time, if you're talking to a constituent, they all have phones, they make their own calls, and that's what happens sometimes in these situations, is they call the authorities, they show up, and it's dealt with. Same at a dog park, if there's two aggressive dogs, for instance, they deal with it. Specifically, regarding our county ordinances, chapter 10.4 under permits, sub 4, I can just read it to you. No person shall place any structure, bulletin board, or, I'm sorry.
You want to go to 9.
9, thank you. That was another one for posting stuff without permission. Sub 9, no person shall camp, erect a tent, or sleep overnight in any county park without written permit. So our parks close at 10 p.m. So after that, you would need written permission in order to be at the park after hours. We do allow it for boundless adventures if they're having a night climb. We've done it for Pringle Nature Center for stargazing events, but they actually fill out a specific permit we authorize for that organized activity, or even a Boy Scout group that's staying overnight. So, but it needs written permission to stay in our parks after 10 p.m.
So if it's during normal business hours, there's no issue there as far as that goes?
No.
Okay, and then as far as personal belongings, is that if their personal belongings are remaining overnight but the person is gone, is that another ordinance violation possibly?
I would say no, because, people leave stuff all the time in the county park. And again, we don't like to be overbearing, especially with certain individuals, unless it becomes a life safety issue. So if we know these things, we do report it to the sheriff. I talked to the chief deputy today just to figure out, as far as their interactions with that individual at Silver Lake Park. So we're in direct communication with a lot of these situations. Same thing over at Kemper Center. We try to get them services, and they did. They took those services up. That was actually a good event that happened. Is the city of Kenosha had different nonprofit organizations through the Sharon Center. They made contact at Kemper Center after one night, I think, after they approached those two individuals. They got the help they needed. So again, it's just trying to work through those processes and just try to smooth out probably a rough situation for them as much as it is, for the general public, our parks operations.
Do you have any idea, ballpark, I know you mentioned about 4, but do you have any other numbers as far as how many these incidents get reported to the sheriff's department in a year, or is it common? Is it like once a month this is happening, or how common is this?
Some aren't reported at all to the sheriffs if they're not doing anything wrong, but we do know they're homeless. So there was 2 years ago, there was a person living in their vehicle, and we knew that, but they're following all the rules. They left the park at 10 o'clock. They're there the next day, and they stayed in the same exact parking stall and didn't bother a soul. And actually, he built up a relationship with our county park staff and reported other challenges or people going on. So he was kind of our eyes and ears. So again, if you would do it the right way. So exactly. So it's every person's different, right? Every committee member is different. And how you handle that, you just have to start to train your staff to build up those relationships, but also know to protect yourself at the same time that you don't know their background with anyone.
And I will say, just as I'm chairing Human Services, do you have direct connections with our health department, Human Services department, as far as the resources that the county is offering? Because I know the county health department will go out and specifically looking for people that are homeless, put them up in a motel. They do that every so often just to try to do a sweep of the county and try to help people that are in those situations. Do you have a direct line to those departments where you're offering our county services to them as well?
So we've always had the Sharon Center as our point of contact, because honestly it's been more out west, and that's more of the western services through that nonprofit. So that's been our first line. But I know that the Sharon Center also knows of those county services through them, and then they have that basically Rolodex of different services through our departments based on what their individual needs are.
Okay.
So we've always done it through the nonprofit ones first.
Okay. Well, yeah, maybe keep Human Services the entire county, so maybe
right.
keep that up front as well, just to make sure that those resources are getting to everyone that needs them. That's all I have.
Just wondering if there's any time where the services that we do have are filled to the max, so we don't have room for more. Is there a time like that?
Not that I'm aware of. I know in winter, obviously, it's not as much of a thing with people camping outside, and they must take up residence somewhere that's not within our county park. So this is more of a seasonal thing, but I've never heard of any place not being able to accommodate, but I haven't asked that question specifically either.
So I'm just wondering if this is a preference rather than a actual need.
I'd say yes for some.
All right.
Just
one more quick question. What you walked us through at the beginning as far as training employees about stepping back if the situation escalates, all that type of stuff, is that a policy of the county, or is that more just training? Do we have that written down anywhere for county employees?
We do not have anything written as far as that goes. That's more of internal training and counseling and coaching as far as our staff goes.
Okay, thank you.
I could add as well, for our building managers at the job center, Human Services building, Civic Center, Public Safety building. We do see a lot of homeless downtown, down by the church. We see it quite often, and our manager is instructed the same way. You know, contact the sheriff, don't engage, be helpful. But we run into it in the buildings as well.
Do you know if we have these types of, this I know specifically Sharon Center, but anything else that the county has that are available? I know a lot of it's going to end up on the ground or waste paper. Anything like that is out there for people to be able to see. I get into the city very, a few times, just whatever's required for me to be here, and a few times I have to go through there. So I don't know if there's billboards or anything like that are readily available, people can see them. And I think more specifically around the county buildings where people can get help if they need it. Is there anything like that out there?
There's definitely a billboard down 52nd Street, but I know Samantha was going to add.
So at the public safety building,
Chairman,
We did have an update, I guess, for the public safety building bathroom renovation and north employee washroom remodel. We had a walkthrough today. Everything went well, so we did a punch list with the architect, and that will be finished up by the end of the month. So we're right on target to complete. So that's good to go. But no, everything else is as written.
Anybody?
Anything else coming up planning-wise, or is it in the budget cycle?
Oh, yeah, heavy in the budget stuff, working with Chris on all the budget planning. You know, as far as project at the public safety building, we are looking at, a small remodel of a restroom, washroom in there. The locker room in the basement, Frank is working on, and I think he's going to share something about that later. But those are some of the few coming up in that building.
It looks like there's some continuation of the projects that go into next year.
Mm-hmm.
There was some deferred, expenses, or, the costs were over budget, so you're deferring some of that to next year. Is that what? I know Frank's got some of those.
Yeah, so Brookside, we were able to secure a lot of the material this year, and the contractor's going to honor their labor going into next year. So if we start that project later in the year, they're just going to roll right into 24 with that.
That's good. So then we're not going to see an increased cost because of that?
Correct.
We just phased it so that it can move forward?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. The IR heaters that were completed here at the county center, that'll go into phase two next year. That'll be similar budget. Should be right on. Shouldn't be much of an increase there.
Good. Quick question. The power outage during the heat wave over at the job center, was that related to just the grid overall, or was that specific to our building?
The report was it was an underground hit.
Okay.
So I don't know exactly what that means, if it was construction or somebody hit something, but no, it was back on. Went off around 2:30, was back on about 5:30.
We don't have any generators or anything over there?
Nothing.
Okay.
No.
So then the new
building will.
Yes. Okay, yeah, make sure they're there.
Now, I don't know if we're going to be supplying generator power to the air conditioning at the new building, but we were going to supply backup power for staff.
Okay. Well, I know we advertised that as a cooling center during heat wave, so I just
correct.
Noticed
yeah.
that was probably there was others close by.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Everyone good? All right. Thank you, Matt.
You're welcome.
And we'll back on to Matt. He's got a busy night.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Nothing new that's not in the report. I will pass along. We had a very successful picnic in the park, so there's a event recap over there. So just for any supervisor that attended, thank you for showing support. I know Supervisor Thomas, I saw you out there driving past. I don't know if you had an opportunity to attend the event. But we had about 4,200 people, very happy crowds, one of our larger crowds of the public picnic in the park. So hope we can plan another one for next season. And like I say, everything else in the report is up to date.
What did you say the headcount was?
4,200.
Oh, 4,200.
Yeah.
What was the last one?
I would say it was a couple hundred shy of that, if I remember correctly.
Well, did we have a headliner this time around?
Yes. County Executive's favorite person, Chris, I'm going to screw up the list. Cruzy, thank you.
There you go.
Is there some karaoke going on?
He was runner up in a voice company.
Yep.
Nice. I just wanted to follow up.
Go ahead. I just want to say, because I've said last year I brought to the attention, and this year a couple times on the parking that was around Petrifying Springs, and I just want to say that the parking is resolved by stringing the ropes up and all the other kind of things to make it a much safer area, especially when there were probably thousands of cars that traversed that area throughout the day. And appreciative that, especially after drinking, people are able to find a safe place back to their car. So I appreciate that being taken care of.
Thanks.
Anybody else?
Yes.
Go ahead, Aaron.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
So it's been brought up a couple of times at the council board meeting about, is it the beer garden and the traffic and stuff like that at Petrifying Springs? Has that any of that got back to you at all, Matt, to work out with the sheriff's department?
About the parking
issues or something? I don't know it personally, but I know it's been brought up a couple of times. Has it been brought to your attention at all?
I know Supervisor Thomas has a few emails regarding his concerns over parking, specifically along County Highway JR that abuts the eastern entrance of Petrifying Springs Park, where the Petrifying Springs Beer Garden is located. And there have been illegal parking instances, both one instance on the actual entranceway where we have a stop sign. So absolutely, I agree that we can't have people where they can't see out towards a busy county road, look left and right before making their segue onto that busy road. But also on County Highway JR, where we have no parking signs posted in both directions, numerous of them, during busier evenings for the park in general, cars do take advantage of some grass parking alongside the road shoulder. We have escalated parking citations as well, trying to change that behavior where people just assume that they can park wherever they please. So we've done that with collaboration with the Sheriff's Department. They're well aware to mitigate those measures, especially during our busy nights. During Picnic in the Park, any of the beer garden and larger special events, we actually have permission through UW Parkside to do overflow parking, and we have a shuttle service that goes back and forth, which is very efficient for people to be able to have these larger parking lots available to them to get to these events. So I think through mitigation measures, both with our ropes and things like that, as much as trying to reinforce with parking citations, we're just trying to change behavior with people finding reasonable parking solutions that are, I think, realistic too. So I think we're getting there for sure.
Okay. And I haven't been there to see it myself, but I just heard it a couple of times, so thanks for the update.
You bet.
What's tomorrow? Cigars?
Stogies, Steins, and Sinatra.
Yeah, so
I just want to say a big thank you to the Parks Department. I think you guys have done a phenomenal job with all of the activities at all of our parks. And as president of the sister city, we had 24 visitors from Wolfenbüttel, Germany, and we made sure that we were able to go to the Mahone Jazz Fest, but make it in time over to the park to see all the fireworks, and they were very impressed by our community, how our community comes together, how well kept our parks are, both in the city and county. They also went to the county fair, and really good overall impression of Kenosha County. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Is there a possibility of just talking about the parking again? Is there a possibility to put up either temporary or permanent signage, maybe at that T intersection when people are leaving the dog parks to your right, beer gardens to your left, that says overflow parking this way, free shuttle? You know what I mean? Just to communicate, because that person that's driving through, there's just like, oh, there's a spot, and you know,
right,
they don't care. Is there something that the county can do just from an education standpoint, maybe just for the summer months, because that's really only when that's a problem, but just literally pointing down towards Parkside, overflow parking this way, free shuttle, people, you know, so people can kind of make that last minute decision.
We do have those for our major events with arrows pointing all the way to the person.
What about like just during the weeknights though, when it's
It's hard because we'd have to have staff to put those out. I don't think we could permanently keep something like that, like on A-frames or figure that out. And we don't have shuttle services except for those busier days. So if we know, like for the Flannel Fest and Undie Runs coming up, we plan accordingly with the shuttle services, A-frames, ropes are going to be out there indefinitely. So that way we can try to plan for that overflow operations during those events. And that's when we inform UW Parkside to ask for their permission for those larger events. Typically, not unless it's a beautiful day and everyone comes out, the main park can handle that type of parking as far as that operation. There is a few times where you're just like, oh, between the dog park, the soccer field, you get all those amenities under one umbrella that it's a beautiful day out. Yeah, you might have an overflow situation, but it's really hard to predict those instances with overflow signage and shuttle services.
Is there any opportunity, not that it would, you know, with Park Center right there, it kind of sounds stupid, but is there any opportunity or space for additional parking inside Pets in the future?
Potentially. It's not something that we looked too much into because it's a cost to do something like that too. But up on top where the JR parking lot is, we expanded and doubled that footprint, I want to say like 4 years ago, maybe even five now, to try to widen that footprint. But there's still open space, but you don't want to pave park paradise to put up a parking lot too. So it's one of those balances.
You might be younger than that.
Sorry.
Look it up.
Google it.
Not in space.
Yeah.
Control your age.
Yeah,
so.
Any other questions for Matt? Thank you, Matt.
You bet.
Let's raise two Matts. Okay, Frank, you're next up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No real updates. I just, for the men's, the public safety building, men's locker room, shower, bathroom remodel, these are the locker room and shower that the KPD and the Sheriff's Department deputies use. It's 40 years old, and you know, we looked at different stuff, but at the direction of the county executive, I sat down with Pete Dietz of the police department and said, what's the number one priority? And he said it was the showers and the bathroom. So we focused on that and came up with a plan. These are 3D renderings based off of the design. We're actually using a very economical method called Miracle Method. It molecularly bonds to the old tile, but it gives it a brand new look. And we've done that in several places throughout the county in bathrooms. To really make it, it seals it, there's no more grout, it's easy to clean, but it also looks very good. So, and we're gonna be adding more electrical outlets, things like that, because there's lots of things to be charged nowadays in the areas we can. So that's, I just wanted to pass this out. And
show you.
Hot off the presses.
A curiosity question.
Sure.
Is there anybody still that used this when it was brand new 40 years ago, and they would still be using it now?
Wow.
If so, I think we named the bathroom after.
Or at least give them a plaque.
That's a good question.
Give them their own honorary stall.
You got me stumped. I mean, Chuck Smith was here a long.
I think there might be some employee that's been there 40 years that knew this as new. Then.
Patty started in 83. Patty Bilski started in 83.
Patty, yeah, she's in facilities maintenance. Chuck Smith, he retired before the pandemic. He might have been here.
Just been a little one of those little factoid things.
Yeah, that's a good question. We're going to have to dig that up.
When's the last time the women's locker room was updated? Because I'm thinking.
Excellent question. Actually, when the addition was put on, just about a little over 11 years ago,
okay.
It was redone. In fact, you know, Samantha pointed out we should look to put more outlets in there too for you know, all kinds of things. But you know,
we had 29 years to go before we had to do that.
Hopefully not. Hopefully, okay. No. We have our own in-house electrician nowadays that can do that.
No, I just wonder if there should be something to look at in the future, especially when you're putting something that's nice together. Not that I've been in the women's locker room.
So the problem is that the ladies' locker room is much nicer than the men's locker room, and so there was money appropriated 3 years ago, and it hasn't been utilized. Again, it was a discussion point between the mayor and the previous county exec. Right. The deeds came to me and asked for it to be done. I said, I only have so much money. I don't have enough to do the lockers in the men's locker room. So that's where the decision was made to really tailor it to what they need. Right now they have, like, their showers are those open area showers. Again, giving them a little bit more privacy, like in the women's bathroom. But again, making sure that there are enough outlets where they, in the new locker room area, where the locker area, they wanted outlets in each one of their lockers. But that's not going to be able to be done. So again, we're taking it with the resources that we have. Frank and his team have done that job. And again, it's working with both the sheriff and the police chief. Both of them are supportive. Obviously, most of our people go home at night, take their take-home vehicles. But there are some that actually work out there. I went and did a fact-finding mission a couple mornings just to see if it worked out.
Yeah, I know it was several years ago that it was going to be just an update that became a whole new renovation. That was just way too expensive for what was budgeted at the time, what was going forward. So it was good. Thank you. Anybody else?
One more question. The KCC, the backup generator, I saw the bids were received. Just curious. It says checking references within budget. You know, just curious on the numbers on that.
We're actually, I'll let Chris chime in. It did come in higher than we would have liked. I don't have the numbers right here, but what we did was we were able to take, by eliminating the generator that was separate out at the radio tower, right in back of the building, and actually, long story, but it makes the, by powering it off of the power that comes into the KCC and that generator, we're less likely to lose power because it came off a different pole, which if something happens further north, it actually cuts power off starting at that radio tower and everything else, but the power has it. So we were able to take $100,000 for that. With that, and I think we were within the 15% with the bids that came in, and then that's only if we needed additional contingency, you know, the 10%. So it came in a little on the high side, but still manageable.
Okay. So it'd be the one generator running both, backing up both the tower and here.
Correct.
And the tower had a tendency to go down more often because of the not as robust of a service going to it as there is here.
Correct, because anything that would, it turns out that the power for the building was fed off of, there's a sub-distribution station down south here, and it runs north, and the telephone pole that the power comes in at fed this building. The next telephone pole over had basically circuit breakers. If anything happened to the north of here, all the way down 45, that crossed the power line, shorted it out, it would throw the circuit breakers there. Well, that was the pole that served the radio tower. So we had that happen several times. We had power here, but not there, that was running the generator. So actually, not only did we save money running, or just eliminating one generator, all the maintenance time, all the, you know, all of the service from Cummings that we have, our personnel time to manage two generators, have one, but it feeding it off of the building and through that generator out there will actually have less downtime from the grid.
And I also want to say this is one of the reasons why we haven't gone forward with the KCC renovation right now, is because we need to have the generator in place so that we can make sure that all of our equipment here, the backup of that dispatch, can all operate off of that power. So again, things haven't been pushed off because of other reasons. It's really because of power. And I just want to give, tomorrow is our 30th anniversary of the opening of the KCC. So when you leave the building, take a look at the plaque. Liz Pratt and I do a cake and coffee, but so many different little things. But it is, this building is 30 years old.
It's as old as Zach, he said.
So August 29th.
I was a baby.
So you don't remember when you were building this, do you?
No, I don't, actually. But that was always been.
Anybody have any more questions for Frank?
This generator, are we taking a generator offline? You said we're not using a generator anymore?
Well, there's two. There's one for the building, and then there's one for the tower. So, yes, the tower one will be completely eliminated, because that'll be run from this building and backed up by the new generator here.
So my question is that salvageable, or is that just a set in stone?
Actually, we put it in the bid, because sometimes they can find secondary markets for it. So we and these guys know it the best, and so we actually had it as a line item for a deduct or an addition, depending if they can't. So in that case, some of them had it as a deduct, some of them had it as an addition. The winning bid in this case had it as a deduct.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's these sometimes environmentally the emissions and stuff are too old, but these guys know what's worth it, what's not. So we put it in there for them to try to give us the best deal.
I was just thinking, I don't know how mobile it was, if it's some, you know, Brookside, we have places that I know we've been replacing generators, so is there something, if we kept an inventory that can be used, or if it was like cemented in and you can't just move it around. So.
Yeah, this one's pretty tough, but the problem is it's at that 30-year mark where the parts, if something goes bad, all of a sudden the parts it's a week to get the part, and that's why we have a preventive plan to change these ahead of time. Yes.
Makes sense.
Thank you, Frank. Okay, well, we're going to have Kwame and not Clement today, which is perfectly good with me. So, hey, Kwame, anything different from what was submitted? Anything new?
Nope, no updates.
Do you have any questions?
I do. The accident that happened at Highway NN just east of B today, I guess our crews had to go out because there was so much gravel. It's that the Pat's race truck. He must have like really spun out or something for there to be so much gravel. I'm just wondering who will pay for that? Do we pick up that cost or does Pat's, depending on what the cause of the accident was?
So that call came in and I was aware of that accident and I know someone went out there to assess to see the damage and whatnot, but I'm not sure.
It said on scanner that there was quite an amount of gravel on the road that had to be removed.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'll just follow up.
Yeah, I can get more information.
Okay.
To see.
Because I'm interested in who pays for that, because I'm sure there'll be an insurance plan.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'll get more information and pass it on.
When okay, you're ready. All right, thank you very much.
Okay, any more questions for Kwame?
I'm happy Highway 50 is open.
That's
I'm
not
happy that 31's done. Still
that's
highways.
Not us.
It's highways.
It's not our highways.
I drive it.
Well, take a bow on these now.
Yeah.
Well, just tell them to know that the weeds are getting tall along the corridor.
150?
50 and 31, but that's the 31's the state one. Because yeah. But there is some spots on 50 where it's just getting overgrown.
50 is a state one, too.
Yeah, I'm talking about in the middle of the construction project that's going to really tall right now. It's really hard to see when you're trying to turn.
Yeah.
But that's when they're doing all the resurfacing.
Three's moving along. You heard anything about how that was going to go out with Amanda? She was going to give us an update on 83, right?
I did talk to the supervisor in West East. She met with the DOT coordinator this week. They don't have dates. She talked about it on the issues. So
right. But there's nothing new out of that. It's just all going on. Plan. Yeah. Okay. Anything else? No? All right. Thanks, Kwame. We have glasses back on. James, there you are. First time out. We'll be gentle with you.
I get to introduce you.
Ooh, special.
Well, nobody. So I'm really pleased to be here to introduce you to my appointee, Director of Golf, Jim Wallace. Jim comes to this position with a wealth of experience. Most recently, he served as Kenosha County's Golf Mounds Supervisor at Brightondale since March of 2022. Prior to that, he had 8 years of supervised, he was superintendent of greens at Delaware Country Club. Before that, he was a senior golf course superintendent at prestigious Medina Golf Club in Medina, Illinois, and he has 18 years of leadership experience with an outstanding record, and has a passion for golf. I have to say, when we interviewed him, we had four candidates, and he rose above, and we brought two in for second interviews, and did a really great job, and so I was really honored to offer him the role, and he's been filling in as the interim director. Also, Jim holds a Bachelor of Science in Public and Environmental Affairs Management from Indiana University and has a Professional Golf and Turf Management Certificate from Rutgers University. He and his wife are expecting their second child in the next coming weeks.
Tuesday.
I wasn't sure of the dates. I know it's the 5th. So he's going to be busy for the weekend, and hopefully she's feeling okay. And so So it's my pleasure to introduce Jim Wallace as our interim health director.
Jim, what would you like to state today? We got a resolution, I think, do we not?
Yes, action item.
Yes.
So we really need a motion first.
We'll make a motion to approve.
Well, I guess we could. So they want to take a motion to
To request to approve the appointment of James Wallace as director of the Division of Golf Operations.
What Supervisor Belson said.
Okay, so it was moved by Supervisor Stock, seconded by Supervisor Thomas. Any discussion? You've heard a lot, so Supervisor Thomas is also.
Probably with the other supervisors, I had a call. And one of my questions always when I'm talking with new people is like, oh, where are you from, blah, 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 that kind of stuff. Turns out he grew up about 3 or 4 miles from where I grew up in Indiana. Went to a high school where I coached at for a number of years. And he just came, when we came here early, he recalled maybe that I was one that taught him how to throw the discus. So thankfully, he probably went to golf instead, so I'm sure. But oddly enough, we had a little background after we started talking and investigating each other's past a little bit. So it was just a very coincidence on bringing a little Indiana flavor up here.
Yeah, I had a conversation as well, and went very well. And my questions or concerns, just feedback was just there's a lot happening in golf moving forward, and he's definitely up to speed on all that with the plans that we've been working on. So definitely excited to see you take the reins. We already have. I'm looking through the resume here. I don't see your golf score though. Was that supposed to be?
When you get in the golf business, you stop playing golf. But thank you all very much. I'm both honored and excited to work with Ms. Kirkman and Shelley and everyone else. The county center has been wonderful to work with, and I'm very, very excited.
So one of my biggest questions is whenever we get people appointed into great positions that we have is that just want to make sure they're sticking around for a while, because the whole interview process and everything else usually ends up taking us a lot of time. So. You're sticking around for a while?
So my wife and I have wanted to live in southern Wisconsin since we met in 2013. This was kind of, we got married in Lake Geneva in 2015. And I'd always kept an eye on the job market up here. And when the job with the county came up, we jumped at it. So I'm 42. We just bought our first home. We hope it's our only home ever. We have a 6-year-old and a newborn coming. And it's going to be tough for you guys to get me out of here.
All right, sounds good. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Anybody else? All right.
I just have a small question. Is your name Jim or James?
James is on my birth certificate. Most people call me Jim. James is fine too.
Okay. I just wondered.
I'm just curious.
I think it's Mr. Wallace to you.
Driver's license says James.
Thank you. All right, seeing no more discussion with the governance, how would you
aye.
Vote on the resolution? Okay, rest of the committee.
Aye.
Aye.
Congratulations, you've now got to get you in front of everyone else. Huh?
Thank you.
Welcome.
Go ahead. At the last committee meeting, they were talking about how the numbers are doing really well this year. You were good enough to provide us with some of the financial information and all that kind of stuff. And since this is last year being a neophyte to all this kind of stuff, and with us increasing the rates and all that kind of stuff, I just have some questions of how do we use the surplus of, in addition to covering all the expenses and probably some kind of reserve that goes from 1 year to the next for golf, how does the balance of that get, does it go back to the county in the general fund, or is it, do you know that?
Golf has their own fund, and with these last couple of years of them getting extra surplus of funds, we now pretty much use those to cover a lot or all of their capital dollars. Previously, before COVID hit, we would bond for a good majority of that. So now a lot of these reserves are going to make them, quote unquote, more self-sustaining. obviously than what they were, but than any other department within the county.
Yeah, no, that was just a question of how that, and is that, and if we did this last year, I don't remember it with everything else. Does that come back to us and we approve on how that money's being used, or is that self-determined within that, the golf department?
A little both. So if they, obviously if they have more rounds, more quantity, whatever, there's also more concession, more stock, more expenses that go into it. So if they make more, they're also allowed to spend more.
But we still have oversight.
Yeah, so like the capital items, it's not like we're going to go out and just buy a whole bunch of stuff just to buy it because there's a lot of money in there. Anything that we buy that's a capital reference that isn't in the capital budget, we would still at least give some type of letter of reference or something to you guys that says, here's what we would like to do. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it needs to formally be approved at that point, but it's.
I guess the reason I'm thinking is because one of the reasons I had these questions before, what made me think of it more so was that we get a monthly statement from Brookside and Willowbrook, and they break down all the expenses, all the income, all that kind of stuff is broken down so we know how they're doing on a monthly basis. In the last couple of years, thankfully they're improving right now. And since we only have two true businesses that operate within county government, the golf and Willowbrook Brookside, it would be nice if we could have a similar monthly report during the busy seasons, we'll say April through October. Whatever the operating season is, I think it would be nice to get something when sort of a line item, a profit and loss, whatever that might look like we get from Brookside.
Brookside.
So we can see how it's doing on that kind of a regular basis. Because I think if there's huge surpluses that exceed whatever might be, that money should come back.
No,
we changed that structure.
No, we approved that last budget cycle.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying.
It's all goes to golf, and we approve on the golf.
Okay, well, I'm just saying.
If they want to have them, where you're driving monthly, I'm okay with
that. Yeah, no, they're two separate issues. I just think it would be good to know how that business is performing within county government. That would be a single issue. Yeah.
It should, because they are accountable to us.
And I'm okay with that. I just want to work that out somehow.
I would caution against monthly, just knowing the seasonality of the business. I'm assuming you guys get a lot of money up front for the people buying the annual passes, but it's not going to match up to your expenses.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to show negative for the first good couple of seasons.
I think what we see in our annual budget basically tells the story of golf. I don't know if you break it up monthly, because in a seasonal business, the expenses are not going to match up to the income.
Well, you could do 1 year against the next.
That's our budget.
We're supposed to be overlooking it as a committee. I would like more granular kinds of financial data.
They do share that, though, like with the money for any tournaments coming up, they share. If there's, like, when they put in the new the golf machines.
The simulators.
Yeah, the simulators. So they do review that with us. But their expenses are typically operational and maintenance. And we do see that in the budget.
Maybe a report monthly or quarterly identify what our break even is in rounds of golf and just compare that to where we are from month to month. You know, we're selling this many rounds of golf and here's where we should be at, here's how many we're selling. Because that will tell a better story, I think, than the numbers themselves of your P&L numbers, because they're not going to match up. It's just going to be a mess, especially at the beginning. But if you guys know your break even is, I have to sell this many rounds of golf in March, April, you know, break it up that way.
That was done.
You're going to get a better take of it, I feel.
I mean, that is sort of the reason why they started giving the rounds for a comparison of year to year.
The amount of rounds
rounds right now, I just checked today.
But maybe just have something that we can compare to, like what's our baseline and where are we at, would give us a little bit more information, if that's helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And that
would do we have a break even of the number of rounds or whatever that we need to get, either on a per month in April, this is what we expect, or at least an expectation, a comparison to expectation. Have we done any of those types of gyrations?
I don't know if we have that exact one. Nick has some pretty detailed spreadsheets in regards to each course, the expenses, revenue from each course.
Yeah.
I don't know if we have a break even at one, but we can easily probably put one together that will give them very close.
Yeah, I was going to say, whatever you guys think you need to know, that you know you're on the right track, things are going away, or we have to pivot or adjust or change.
We used to get the round comparison year over year.
Yeah, we've got that.
Yeah. And so that would help us understand, and then if they're putting in more tournaments and things like that, and if that's gone up, that's an indicator. But it's usually reported if they have larger expenses that they want to purchase something, they let us know.
Yeah.
Well, because there's going to show, it was like last year, spring of 2022, we were rained out like all of April. Golf wasn't doing nothing. I wasn't doing nothing for you guys. We were doing
right.
It rained like every other day, so you're down. But then I think we made it up that summer, right? Like it over and above. Yeah. So it'll even out.
That now, so.
Yeah.
I would say whatever criteria it is that you guys look at to know that you're on track or whatever, at least we get
everything. Well, yeah, I mean, what we typically do to, and we do this with every department, is monthly we have expense recaps.
Yeah.
That compare year to year and the month that you're in. Obviously, we kind of wait till the end of the month so we can get revenue in, we can let payroll kind of process through, and we compare it because we know how we finish at the end of last year.
Yeah.
So if we're comparing to that moment, we know if we're either above or below or probably spot on. So we do that monthly, and that's kind of where the general ledger report that Barna gives at the finance meetings, every month they're asking us kind of, what is it looking like?
Okay. And the director has reported, like, if there was car accidents or, you know, trucks going and tearing up greens, which prohibited, you know, income from coming in. So.
Right.
My thought is we're so late in the season. If we're going to do something like this, let's maybe start next year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
I mean, whenever they're ready, if they want to start this year, just to get a feel for it and know where they want to go, I'm okay with that.
We'll get it.
Yeah, I'll work with Chris and Nick, and we can come up with something succinct to kind of give you guys on a
right
basis.
And then, so if you want to see something different, then we can ask.
Absolutely.
Just to follow up, so congratulations, you're in charge now.
Let's go to county board.
Well, as close as you're going to get for today, anyway.
Yeah.
So, been around the golf courses here for a while. What things do you see that you want to put your fingerprints on?
I don't know if it's necessarily my fingerprints, but
or expand upon.
The county has done a phenomenal job in taking care of and preserving these assets. I've looked at the master plans at Brightondale, and I have pretty extensive experience in golf course construction. And there's a few things that were sort of looked over in terms of those master planning, in terms of some drainage infrastructure and a few things architecturally. So we're trying to get that into the mix, into these master plans as we look at the future improvements of that property. But overall, I mean, the county has done an impeccable job of maintaining these assets and keeping them affordable. You know, there's a lot of great golf in Wisconsin. We're never going to be Kohler or Aaron Hills, and we don't want to. We want to keep golf accessible to everybody and affordable to everybody, yet have them walk away thinking, wow, for what I paid, that was really an outstanding experience. And so to build upon that and just build a really good employment culture as well, so that we have a happy, hardworking staff that takes pride in the golf properties that they work at.
This made me think of something, and still in golf, how is the irrigation systems being installed? Is that was the red course?
Or yes, that's just
a red course.
Yeah, no, I'm just curious if that
supposed to
clean up afterwards.
Yeah, they have some wonderful equipment now where they can pull things through with pretty minimal impact. Yeah, they'll pull use a pipe puller for most of it. Contractors beginning to mobilize equipment this week. We start a little bit of this schedule.
So damage around this where that is real minimal.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Jim, the improvements that are going to be coming to Brightondale, extending the driving range, I guess some of the putting green and all that. I think in the past it was that we could do those things and we started attracting like NCAA tournaments and all that. Is that still the goal?
NCAA, yes, we do have a Midwest Collegiate Tournament coming up that fills both the blue and white golf courses. I don't know that we'll ever get like the prestigious, you know, regional qualifiers for NCAA Division One. I don't think we're, no matter what we do with our driving range, I don't know that it can get to that that size. But we can certainly host a lot of, you know, what, UW Parkside type of university events, because those golf programs are growing as well. The women's golf programs at those universities are growing, so we'll be able to do a lot.
Just along the same line as what Supervisor Thomas was asking, but as far as the capital improvement plan that we talked about, that 10-year plan that we kind of looked at, do you have, are you on board with that, or do you see any tweaks that you would want to make just looking at that, have coming into this? Are you good with that? Is it, would you reprioritize some of those things? I'm just curious where you're at on that.
Absolutely. Stormwater engineering was the big one, and I think we fit that in. The cost of that, of hiring an engineer to properly, you know, the two biggest things with a golf property are getting water on it and getting water off of it. That has the most direct impact on our revenue, because golf carts are 85% of our rounds of golf. So to have that probably should have been the first part of a master plan for the golf property, was to have the drainage engineered properly. So we think we can kind of fit that in with what we're already planning to do. And then as far as the order of it, in 2019 was the last year that the golf courses were pretty close to breaking even, but it was because the white course was closed for most of the year at Brightondale, so you're taking away, you know, almost a quarter of the golf that we're going to sell. So if we do 9 holes at a time, starting with the red 9 in practice facility, and on the blue course we only close 9 holes per season, that we've always got 36 holes open, and there's not as big of an impact on the revenue and the income as we're doing those projects and improving the properties. The other thing is timing. Contractors are busy because golf is doing well, and if we don't go out to bid for red here soon, then we may not be able to get it done in 2024. So we may be pushing this our calendar back a little further.
How much of that work are you able to do in the off season?
When the ground's frozen, you can't do much, but we're not moving a ton of earth. We're basically rebuilding some bunkers, and so it's certainly an option. Most contractors will want to go south during that time because there's work for them down there. But there's not a ton you can do because the ground's frozen.
Thank you, Jim. And Chris, for your reporting on that too. All right. Director Billingsley is not here, and in her place, I guess Chris will be giving a quick presentation on public works in general.
Yeah, so Shelley typed out some highlights that she just wanted me to announce. First one being the Human Services Building, the project number one, shell and site improvements are moving along. I'll pass these pictures out because I kind of talked about it. The interior demolition is mostly complete. The next phase is excavation, utilities, and demolition of exterior storefronts for a new addition location. Project number two, tenant improvements, which is interior, is current bid opening of September 13th, and Frank Martinelli is the county contact for this project. Our second little bullet point is policies. We have fully implemented the handling of vendor rebates policy back in March, actually. What we're doing is we're literally taking all the SKU numbers from every receipt, recording them in a spreadsheet, and when things are also purchased with them, notating the SKU number, it's showing us the balance, it's showing us who we've given these rebates to, so we can hold some type of accountability that follows along with those. The most recent policy that was implemented is reimbursement for highway mechanics obtaining their CDL. A quick summary of it is they will be They'll have the opportunity to use up to $4,000, which is contingent on them getting that within 1 year, and staying with the county for 2 years. If either of those do not happen and they use any of those funds, they have to pay it back in full. This is to try and help with her next bullet point, where we currently have 3 mechanic openings. One was just filled. I think he just accepted this week. So there's still currently 2. The reason that there is that gap is one was promoted, his superior retired, and one moved up. One just got a job, moved and got a job further away. The commute was just no longer what he was looking for, and the other one took an opportunity that the county just couldn't much compete with. So this reimbursement policy was implemented to try and help obtain some of the quality that's out there.
That position that was just filled, are they going to be utilizing this, or are they already?
Yeah, so the person that just accepted does not have their CDL, okay. So they would need to go through this policy.
Okay, good.
I don't want to interrupt you if you got.
No, go ahead.
How many people do you expect to go through that program?
I would hope not that many. I mean, they're going to repost the position again. It's kind of just the market that we're seeing. I mean, there hasn't been turnover like this or a gap like this since I've been here. I think it's just too many instances happening all at one time that it makes it look like a bigger issue than what it really is. But we're doing our best to accommodate.
Partly one of the reasons I'm asking you is where my business is, there's a new business just opened up, and that's what they do. CDL license over the road products. I wonder if there's a way where you work with a local company and you say, hey, we're going to send X amount of people over to you. You know, what kind of rate or, you know, what can we work out in that regard? I don't know. I don't know. I have the answer to that. Yeah,
I mean, obviously the hope with the two-year thing is that if somebody does use this, they don't come in with their CDL, that they're staying there for at least 2 years. So at least the turnover would hopefully be down to a minimum. But I understand what you're saying, so yeah, I think passing along to Shelley.
Well, my other thought is that if it's an internal promotion for people, that if we have a program in place where we'll help them get their CDL as part of them working for us and then not move up to make more money, have a different job, whatever it might be. Just a thought.
So generally speaking, our highway guy, you know, they have a CDO usually when they come on. Yeah. This could help out. So the 3 mechanics that we lost, Reed got promoted and Andy retired. The one gentleman took a job south of the border. I tried to match that. And the other one, his wife, newly married, they built a house in Clinton, and so I actually talked to him at the fair. He went to another county, so he gave me some great feedback. And actually, in their county, they're actually down to 4 mechanics. So, and don't run a second shift. So when you actually talk to folks, you get a little bit of information of why they've left. We got this great opportunity to be promoted up. We are working very closely with the highways and the mechanics to try to fill those positions. And to again, Shelley came forward with this proposal.
Being offered to people that are normally maybe like seasonal or part-time or, you know, internally as well as this being?
Right now it's specific to the highway mechanics. Now, whether that becomes a need to be used elsewhere, I guess
I'm just saying this opportunity is being offered to, like, hey, anyone that's, like, people that are currently in working for the county that maybe wanted to be a mechanic.
Oh, anybody that wants to apply, I think, is eligible to fall under this policy. The last bullet point that she has here is the county highway crews paving. I believe they just started this week. It's probably wrapping up in a week or two. Once that's completed, they'll have 9 miles completed, which includes KD North and South, Highway O, Highway F, and then Highway D. And then it comes into the play of what we can do. county exec kind of touched on it earlier. There's two different roads that we're going to be analyzing of which one we can do. The concern would be for one of them, Highway H, is if we do it now, does that hurt future funding when we can do it how it's supposed to be done rather than just taking care of it for the instance of it needing to be done and kind of putting a band-aid on it.
Hold it together.
Yeah,
until
right.
Go ahead.
But we could lose potential future funding.
Right, because the passer rating would increase, it may decrease other things. So they're going to take a look at that. When that's all completed, it should be just under like 12 miles that's paved. We budget 13. The other difference comes from just inflated cost. We budgeted at $200,000 a mile. It's closer to like between $220,000 and $230,000 a mile. So we got to cut back the length just to limit what the budget allows.
Yeah, we have to consider that in our budget that we're now about 10% higher, 15% higher than what we typically have been budgeting.
Right.
And we don't see that going back to 200,000 or something.
I would highly doubt it.
Yeah.
And that was all her comments here. Yeah. So if anybody has any questions, I can try and answer.
I don't know if Chris can answer many of the questions if you have any, but if nothing else, give them to him or wait till Shelley comes back and go from there.
You can pass on, and I can reach out to her too whenever she gets back, but if any more information like this, just a list or pictures I can share with Human Services Committee, because they were starting to ask about it, because they're like, Public Works gets all the updates. Okay. So anything from her that I could share about the progress of the building would be
Yeah, they've been sending progress reports that I've been seeing, so I could look at some of the pictures and comments in there.
I could have taken pictures for it today. I drove by it. Demolishing it.
What day is your meeting?
First Tuesday of the month.
So first Tuesday?
Yeah, that's when our meetings are.
So anything we can get you by next week, Monday?
Yeah. I'll share that with you.
Yeah, I'll talk to her. I'll try and put something together, send it to her, let her kind of say yes, no, make her modification, and send it over.
Whatever you got, I'll just take from that and share with the committee. It'd be great. They're excited about it.
The only other thing I have, I think, is the next bullet point there. So
I'll ask you to take care of that, too, while you're there, unless anybody had any more questions. Okay, so other matters is appropriately be brought before the committee, and we're at the October budget meeting schedule.
The October budget meeting is coming up a lot faster than I think a lot of people may realize. We have one more public works meeting in between that time. Because we meet on the fourth Monday, that doesn't really give us ample time to give our budget presentation and then go right into finance, especially if there's comments, changes, whatever that needs to be done. So the schedule from how I believe it to be is October 3rd is that first board meeting where you guys will get the first look at the budget book. Typically around that October 16th week of is when we would have our finance meeting. Now if we want to do that, or not our finance meeting, our public works budget meeting. Whatever date I guess works for everybody there. I think we still keep it on a Monday, which would be that October 16th, unless people have prior engagements. Then the following Monday is the 23rd, which would be the regular public works meeting. That's the fourth Monday. And then either the 24th or 25th, we would be presenting to the finance committee. So we just need to hash out for sure what dates work best and get those.
Do we keep both meetings a week apart, or do we just need the one meeting on the 16th?
I mean, if you're asking me, I would love to keep it to the one meeting, but
sure, the budget. I don't know if we have a whole lot going on in October that we need to address, but I guess we could look at that at the time. But
yeah, we could see if there's any resolutions that need to be put through.
I'm just saying we just move our meeting up to the 16th.
I think so too.
That would be easier for all of us.
I'm okay with that, but Aaron, what's your 16th look like?
I'm going to be out of town that week.
What's that?
I said I'm going to be out of town that week.
You're
out
the 16th?
Yeah.
The whole week?
Yeah.
23rd is going to be too late.
I will be out of town the 4th. You say the 9th looks okay too.
That's going to give us hardly any time.
Yeah.
That's Columbus Day. You guys technically.
It's the week before we hit the
budget.
We
should be here as well.
Okay.
Aaron, so. Could we do the 13th on a Friday?
I'm okay with that. I don't know about anybody else.
Friday the 13th?
Yeah.
Sounds like a recipe for success.
What could go wrong? Friday the 13th in October. Come on. Anybody have issues with that? Yeah.
I do too. So I'm gone the 11th through the 21st for a long time.
Okay, but we can't schedule around you.
So you can't. You
no,
just
we're not gonna
hey, don't worry about me then.
But you know, make sure you give me some of your questions or concerns.
Absolutely.
Go to the 16th.
But it's
yeah, I'm just curious. Is there an advantage to doing it the 16th or the 23rd or the 16th or the 25th as compared to just trying to pack it all in one day? Is there an
yeah,
advantage
this,
to doing it one way or the other?
Not from our side. I mean, time-wise, yes, time to give you guys time to look at it, time for us to make any modifications, adjustments, whatever.
Although, with the meetings that we've been having, we should be more familiar with this budget than any other budget.
Yeah, right.
So there shouldn't be as much surprises?
The whole
surprises didn't come in our meeting.
So the CIP meeting, which will be this week on Thursday,
right.
Yeah.
So that is the biggest portion of this bill.
Right.
So just a thought. What if we said we'll have it on the 16th and the 23rd, but then at the 16th, if we get everything done, we can cancel the 23rd?
Well, the 23rd is a regular board meeting.
Oh, no. No, I understand it, but we're talking about getting it early so we would have a chance to look at it. I mean, we could have
We'll have it on the 3rd.
Right.
So we'll get the budget.
Right, you guys will get the budget book on the 3rd. On the 16th-ish is when I will actually present the same exact presentation that I will give to the finance. Yeah, that shows you the operating.
When does it go to finance?
The 24th or 25th. I don't know what date public works is.
I mean, right. Well, considering assuming there's not going to be a ton of changes, we do the 23rd. It looks like we would have a full committee at that point. It would just be on us to
be prepared.
Be prepared, right?
I would prefer not to do it that way.
Yeah. I'd rather do the 16th, and then if we don't need the 23rd, we don't need to meet the 23rd at that point. Why don't we do the 16th? Sorry, Aaron.
Yeah, you could call in, phone a friend.
Yeah. You can't vote, but you can call in here. What's going on?
Yeah. That's right.
Okay, we'll do it.
So we're going to say the 16th is?
Say the 16th.
Just a regular board meeting and the budget? And then
budget meeting. We'll keep the 23rd unless we know beforehand we won't have any resolutions or anything like that that has to be addressed. More likely, there's not a whole lot going on in October.
I wouldn't imagine. It's going to be mostly budget for everybody, I would think.
Yeah. What's the budget hearing? The budget meeting. And then we'll hold the 23rd or just in case we need it.
Okay, I'm just saying we can agenda our regular public works meeting on the 16th, and we can postpone those items. You know what I mean?
I don't want to do that. I want to keep this focused simply on the budget. So that's what we're focusing on. We don't have to worry about anything.
Are we going to keep it at 6:30? Do it at 6? What?
Yeah.
Six?
Somebody want us earlier?
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock.
Earlier would be a little bit better.
6 o'clock. Everybody work? Okay, so we're at 6 o'clock.
Typically
tell Shelly she can spend as much on pizza or whatever she wants.
Coffee.
Since you're not doing it, everyone else is. Because I save the comic money, hopefully. But, okay, so we'll do the budget.
The 16th at 6 o'clock.
At 6 o'clock.
This room or the larger room?
It'll be in the larger room.
Okay.
The large one, yeah. We're going to have to have people there.
Yeah, you'll get it.
Governance, how do you vote to adjourn?
Aye.
Rest of the committee?
Aye.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.